Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome in to the Chip Williams Podcast. It's been a little while. I have been out of the country doing some different stuff. It's good to be back in America, first of all. It's good to be back talking in front of a microphone with my buddy Kevin Hughes. Kevin, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. I'm currently checking off the 30 beers and 7 hot dogs I had yesterday. So I'm struggling through the last day of the work week here before the weekend, but I'm alive and surviving over here.
Good. Yeah, you probably needed all 30 of those and as many hot dogs you possibly get. The way that things worked out yesterday. So we'll get into Tennessee stuff. I mean, I don't know. I've got plenty of thoughts on it. I'm sure you do as well. I'm sure everybody in East Tennessee has plenty of thoughts on it. Is everybody ready to just hit the doomsday button, hit the panic button?
I'm sure they are. I'm not too plugged into it. On Twitter, I've seen some overreaction. I don't think in general people understand what kind of program Appalachian State is. I mean, their national exposure or even regional exposure is that Michigan game a couple of years back, and people don't remember that they have, they won they three-peated in national titles for Division II, and they've had guys pretty consistently go to the NFL. This is a team that is, they have a pretty strong tradition of winning. So I think that part of it is something that the Tennessee fan base probably doesn't understand, but in general, I'm sure the panic button has been hit plenty of times.
I'm sure. I put out yesterday Twitter that I was taking App State plus 21.5. And I tried to do the whole reverse jinx thing where it's like, yeah, there's no way that the best Tennessee team of the last decade is going to be the team that was in FCS by 3 touchdowns at home in front of over 100,000 people on opening night. And it didn't work. I actually did put money on Appalachian State. So it was the best of both worlds for me.
Sure.
I have a lot of respect for that Appalachian State team. And like I said, we'll get into more of that. I don't want to start with that, even though that is probably the hot button stuff that everyone wants to talk about.
No, yeah, I think we agreed to start with your time hanging out at Lochte at that gas station down in Brazil.
It was a wild time. At one point he was like, "Yeah, I'm gonna go punch the sign," and I was like, "Yeah, you might not want to do that. These people are a little." Well, first of all, let me just say that Brazilians could not be friendlier. Everybody that I encountered was super nice. They sometimes overly nice even. And it got a little weird at times. But overall, they're just a nicer culture of people than Americans. So the fact that Lochte would want to do this to these sweet Brazilian people, he's an a-hole for that. He's a jerk. And people, I got to be honest with you, people at the Olympics, as soon as that came out, were like, yeah, this didn't happen the way he's saying this happened. There's something there because, number one, it's Ryan Lochte, and he's not the brightest crayon in the box. But number two, it's just like nobody there felt unsafe. Like, it was fine. Like, I swear to you, every half mile you drive down the street, there was one of those military-style Humvees with the top cut out with about 12 guys holding, I don't know what it was, like AK-47s or M-16, some big, massive rifle. It looked like it could probably go fully automatic if they needed it to. So, listen, nobody was messing with anybody in Rio, especially the people that were there for the Olympics. That just wasn't going to happen. They were prepared for that. And one thing that Brazilians as well, they every Brazilian that I talked to that I could understand, because I'll be honest, a lot of them don't even speak English, and I have no idea any words in Portuguese. But they were so concerned about the image of Brazil relative to the rest of the world. I'm sure for the last year, all they've heard is, Zika and the economy and they're impeaching the president and whatever, they were just so ready to have something good happen to them. And now, people are trying to ruin that good thing. So what was it like here in America? I mean, with specifically with the Lochte situation, because I think in Brazil, everybody knew day one, this is BS. That's not how this went down.
Well, you know what's funny is I took a trip with my family to Canada for the first like week and a half of the Olympics, and in Canada they have, I guess, their own deal worked out with the Canadian NBC channel. So everything other than like what they wanted to show us was blocked. So I had no way of watching the U.S. compete in the Olympics. It was all Canadian Olympic athletes, which, as you can imagine, is really bad television. They're not good at it.
That's awful.
Right, and I discovered that their only gold medalist from the previous Olympics was a girl who does trampoline, and they just talked about her all the time. There were a million features because they're awful at everything else. So
the Michael Phelps of Canada.
Correct, but I could not.
She's the Canadian Michael Phelps.
Yeah, I could not stream through an app. Like I tried to go on my computer, tablet, whatever. Everything was blocked. I could not view. Like if somebody posted a tweet with a little Vine or whatever from the Olympics, that got blocked. So I literally was in the dark and only could see Canadian Olympics. So that definitely put a damper on things for me. But by the time I got back, I remember hearing about the Lochte thing, and I mean like. It's not a secret that people in America think that he's an idiot. So that part of it
right.
was already out there. When we heard about it, it was like, well, you know, there's a decent chance Ryan Lochte did something stupid. But once it started to develop, I mean, Twitter really took off with it. And those are the times when you're just so happy Twitter exists because there's a lot of good material coming out of that. But I think it just came out as everybody's like, you know, we already thought this guy was an idiot. Everyone just feels pretty justified in their rationale.
It was so, yeah. Well, it was so funny because like people are like, oh, you know, he's just a kid or whatever, you know, like he, cut him some slack. He's just like he's 32 years old. He's a grown man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Honestly, once you get north of 25, you're a grown man. This guy is 32 years old. Like he's not a kid. He might act like one. He might think that he is still one, but he's not a kid. I mean, people know who he is, but he should know who he is. He's a grown man that's one of the most recognizable faces when it comes to the Olympics. But it's funny you talk about the stuff being blacked out on Twitter. That was one of the worst parts of being in Brazil is I could not watch any of the stuff that was going down on Twitter. All of my advertisements were in Portuguese. Everything that people were tweeting out, it said, you know, this content is not available in your country. I'm currently watching Game of Thrones, and I was very excited in my downtime to hopefully knock that out while I was in Rio. But, of course, the HBO Go or whatever it is that I have is not available in Brazil. And it was rough because also Pandora, not available in Brazil. Spotify, you can only have for the first 2 weeks as a Spotify abroad, and then it cuts you off for whatever reason. Luckily, they have Netflix, but it was a Brazilian Netflix, so my selection was very limited. But for whatever reason, I guess Brazilians are into Mississippi Junior College football because I got to watch The Last Chance U when I was there. And
which is
cool.
A great
show,
yeah.
That?
Oh, yeah.
It's fantastic.
I watched it straight on there about 2 days.
Yeah, that's about what it took me. I was honestly disappointed it was only 6 episodes, but terrific stuff. But, yeah, it's... I don't know. That was the worst part, I think, was not being able to see stuff.
I saw that like Jim Weber got in trouble for posting Vines and Twitter suspended his account. Did you guys get any warning down there? Like, was there a
wow?
They give you a heads up not to take any video because he posted a Vine of the women's gymnastics and had his Twitter account suspended for a couple of days, and he had to go on LinkedIn and Facebook and go that direction because the IOC shut his account down based on copyright infringements. I was curious if you guys were told down there not to post anything like that.
Well, so no is the answer to your question. We were not told that, but I was talking to Sam Amick of USA Today, who's one of the big, you know, NBA writers. That was another cool thing, just kind of getting to rub elbows with guys like Sam Amick and Mark Stein and David Aldridge. Because you know, everyone sends their heavy hitters to go cover Olympic basketball. So anyways, I was just chatting with Sam Amick, and he said, yeah, you know, we've been told you cannot post any video of anything inside the arena. And I just kind of looked at him like, whoops, because I've done that several times. So I guess I'm probably not important enough to have my account blocked. Not enough people saw it. But, yeah, I know that I was there with a guy. So it was me and another guy who just graduated from North Carolina, who's actually working at WBIR in Knoxville now. His name's Lewis. Yeah, he just got the job there. And he was posting videos daily of stuff going on in the basketball arena. So I don't know. I don't know if they just found the big guys and made sure that the big guys didn't do it, because obviously a lot of people are going to see it. But, you know, me and Lewis combined maybe have like 2,000 Twitter followers. So I don't think it really matters what we do. But, yeah, no, we were not told anything like that. So that's interesting. I didn't know that. And I'll tell you one thing that was tough. It's like – oh, go ahead.
I was going to ask that. I'm most curious about, were you in the Olympic Village? Is that where y'all stayed, or do they have a separate media? Is there a separate media Olympic Village, which is probably less cool, but I assume the same amount of sex going on?
Well, first of all, I think you really overrate the media abilities
to make stuff happen. I saw some pictures of your squad down there. That's an entourage-esque crew rolling around.
Oh, yeah, you know us. so, no, we did not stay in the actual Olympic Village. We stayed in the Media Village, and we drove by the Olympic Village. So, basically, the Olympic Village just looks like 20 massive apartment buildings put up right on the coast. And it had banners hanging down of all the different countries where they were staying. But there were, I think, four Media Villages set up, and we stayed in two of them. The first week, we stayed in one. It was called Media Village 3. And Media Village 3 was really nice relative to what, you know, some of the other accommodations were. Then, for whatever reason, I guess they had overbooked Media Village 3, so they sent us to Media Village 1, and that was awful. And that place was terrible. There were cracks in the ceilings. Our room smelled like someone had just taken a dump. The place was basically used for storage. Like, there was no furniture other than a bed. And I don't, like, we've met in person. I'm 6'4 and probably about 3 mils. And so I was sleeping on a twin bed, which, my gosh, was awful. I mean, the mattress, I slept on floors more comfortable than that. So, to be honest with you, though, I spent about 14 hours a day at the basketball arena. So, it's not like I was at home all the time, like, having to deal with stuff like that. But, gosh, the sleeping was awful. The sleeping, and then, like, they fed us cafeteria-style food, which was just not good. I mean, I don't know if I'll ever eat white rice and black beans again as long as I live.
Yeah.
But it, as far as I know, and I don't want to get anybody in trouble, because obviously this was a school-sanctioned trip through the Olympic News Service, but I do believe that one person indulged in the pleasures of the Olympic Village, but other than that, I think that everybody kept it pretty clean because we were
they didn't drop like 10 to 20,000 condoms in the Media Village.
Believe it or not, they did not. They skipped over the media on those. They saved a buck.
That's very disappointing. I had grand ideas in my head of what were going on over there.
Well, I'm sorry to disappoint you, because to be honest with you, we just weren't like that. That's it, man. Like my the trip back to we had to connect in Sao Paulo, Brazil, and then we had a 12-hour layover in the Sao Paulo, Brazil airport. And mind you, we left Rio at about 5 in the morning, so I didn't sleep that entire night because, you know, you've got to get to the airport at like 2, you know, 3 or 4 hours in advance for, you know, a flight, especially when everyone in the entire city is trying to leave. So we had to go to Sao Paulo. We had a 12-hour layover there. I actually wrote a column on about an hour of sleep in Sao Paulo. We then flew to Atlanta, had a 6-hour layover there, finally got back to Memphis. And the very first thing I did, I had my girlfriend pick me up. We drove straight to Central Barbecue, and I destroyed some Central Barbecue.
Yeah.
It was perfect. So, yeah.
No, I read some of your work over there. I mean, it looked incredible. That's an opportunity most people don't get, you know, to go see them or to go to Brazil or to do that. And I'm curious, it sounds like you spent most of your time watching basketball. There were just infinite hot takes in back in the USA about the about the Dream Team or whatever they're calling it now. But I'm curious, if, since you saw it up close and personal, what were your thoughts on that team? And do you think it was put together incorrectly, as I guess Bill Simmons has said over and over? Or what were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it was strange, because I remember I was talking to Lewis, who, you know, I sort of covered basketball with, and I was like, listen, like, the U.S. could put together a team of guys that didn't come and beat this team of guys that did come probably by 20 points. You know, you think about it, just like LeBron, Steph Curry, Kawhi Leonard, you know, Russell Westbrook, Damian Lillard, LaMarcus Aldridge, Blake Griffin, Chris Paul. Like, you could just go on and on. Like,
sure.
Probably 7 of the top 10 players in the NBA did not go to the Olympics. So it wasn't the dream team. It was more like the, hey, this is good enough to win a gold medal team. There's always that fun exercise you can do every Olympics with what's the worst team the U.S. could send and still win a gold medal. And this is probably as close as they've gotten to that, because it turned into just Kevin Durant basically winning every game, because Paul George played pretty well. DeMarcus Cousins, when he wasn't fouling, was pretty good. But, I mean, at the end of the day, like, for whatever reason, it was just Durant. Like, that was the only guy that could get anything going. Carmelo had one good game. Every once in a while, Kyrie would do something. But I don't know, man. It's the thing with the rest of the world is I watched over 40 basketball games. I watched basically half an NBA season in about 2 weeks. And the thing that I've realized is everybody in the world has a point guard. Everybody in the world has centers. And where Team USA gets you is those 6'7 to 6'10 wings that no one else in the world has except for Team USA. And that's
the point,
how they
the point
get
forward,
people every
yeah.
single year. Exactly. Yeah, that's just how they get people. And obviously, they're more athletic than just about everyone else, but that's really where they do their damage. They, like, Serbia just doesn't have a guy that could even handle, you know, Jimmy Butler. Like you know, the fourth best wing that Team USA brought. So,
yeah. Well, it's funny because it's so similar to, like, when you're watching the USA and, like, the World Cup for soccer. Like, we have the correct kinds of people in the correct positions. It's just in terms of individual skill sets, we don't have the guys with the capability of handling the ball the way European players do or South Americans do. It's the same
right.
thing. Like, they look very mechanical in the way they play. It's almost robotic. They have everything right, but they don't have a Kevin Durant. They don't have anything comparable. You know, unless you roll out, like, 45-year-old Manu Ginobili, who I love watching the dynamic of the international teams when they have a couple of NBA players, and just watching those guys take a big old shit all over the other guys on the team. You know, just like they're just clearly are just telling everybody what to do. I enjoy the power dynamic there of Manu and Tony Parker, watching those guys just dominate their teammates on the sidelines.
The,
but,
the best part is, like, watching Patty Mills average, like, 25 a game and be, like, this absolute killer on the international stage. And, like, there's no chance he'll ever be a starting NBA point guard. He's just not. Like, the talent that exists in the U.S. relative to the rest of the world is really insane. Hey, I got to ask, did you get to watch much of Serbia with Teodosic and Miroslav Radulovica? Did you watch any of the gold medal game?
I did not. I think I caught clips. Like I said, I was extremely limited. I was extremely limited by my Canadian exposure, and so I did not. I watched, it's funny because I probably read more about the games and listened to more analysis than I actually spent time watching live basketball. I did not watch a whole lot of it. I would tune in for a couple minutes. I'm interested by it. I find it interesting. That team in particular, it's one of those things where, as I said, they're going to win. It's less interesting because you know they're going to win. And I discovered, like, this year, I thought the volleyball was a lot of fun. I enjoyed watching that. There's just other things that I was more interested in watching than the basketball team this year. But I know that
true
you talked
story,
about
actually.
I saw you on Twitter talking about that Serbia team a lot.
That Serbia team was, like, my favorite team of all time. Like, they were awesome. Like, they had this point guard. His name was Milos Teodosic, and he had this kind of 5 o'clock shadow at all times. He had kind of the, like, really dark hair. And he just looked like he needed to be playing point guard with, like, a Lucky Strike cig hanging out of his mouth. I mean, he was awesome. And, like, he's one of those typical flashy European point guards that, like, he made probably one of the best passes I've ever seen in person. He kind of drove down the middle of the lane, and there was a guy to his right on the corner, and he just kind of takes the ball, flips it over his shoulder. And, I mean, I don't know how he did it, but it was a bullet pass right in this guy's pocket. And the guy missed the three, so it kind of, you know, screwed everything up. But he was a lot of fun. But my favorite player on that Serbian team, tell me if you got to see him. His name was Miroslav Radulica. He's like 7 feet tall. He's got this massive lumberjack beard, 2 full sleeves. Did you get to see that guy at all?
No, I know who you're talking about. I saw the talk of it. You cover it, that team pretty extensively, but I didn't get to watch him play.
So the first time I saw Serbia play, I remember Radulica playing in the NBA. He played for a couple of seasons, maybe even three, but he didn't have 2 full sleeves, and the beard wasn't quite as extensive as it is now. I mean, he's really got a nice lumberjack beard going on. And I just remember I turned to the editor and I was like, hey, listen, I'm going to go try to talk to Radulica, because first of all, he was one of Serbia's best players. So it was totally, you know, rational for me to want to go talk to him. But then I was just like, this guy seems awesome. Like he is terrifying. I think they list him at 7'1", 290. I mean, he is just like a massive human being. And so I get there and I talk to him, and I did that. I think I watched Serbia play 8 times, and I probably talked to him 6 of those 8 times. And so at the last game, after, you know, Serbia's gotten their silver medal, I went up to Radulica one last time and I talked to him. And at the end, he kind of dapped me up, because I guess he had recognized that, you know, I had been there pretty much for all their games and interviewed him almost every single time. And I just said, congratulations, buddy. And in this best, like, James Bond villain accent, he goes, thank you, my friend. Thank you for everything. And I could not have been on cloud 9 anymore. Like, he was the man. I was like, this is so cool. This guy is amazing. I'm all in on Miroslav Radulica. So I kind of hope that some NBA team finds him so that we can be best friends, because that guy could not have been any cooler to me. And he's terrifying. Like, he is just a scary human. I really enjoyed getting to talk to him. And I remember, too, one of the Associated Press writers asked him about his tattoos. And I kind of threw my microphone or my recorder a little bit closer. So I was like, who knows what he's about to say? This is good. So he points to his left arm and he goes, this tattoo is from my favorite book, Dark Tower by Stephen King. The rest of the stuff is just random. I let my tattoo guy do whatever. And I was like, oh, this guy's the best. I love you so much. I've never read Dark Tower by Stephen King, but I'm about to go pick it up now. It was great. It was terrific. I really enjoyed that team.
That's awesome, man. I mean, it seemed like you had a really good time over there. I was definitely jealous.
Yeah, we did. We had a really good time. Any other things you want to know about the Olympics? I kind of told you about the food. It was weird. I had probably the best pasta of my entire life there, because we actually did get to go out a couple nights and eat food and stuff. But for the most part, man, rice, beans, and some sort of brown meat. They never told us what the meat was, but that's it.
Did the Brazilian women live up to the hype?
Absolutely, 1,000%.
Nice.
My goodness,
nice.
They are. That is a different species down there. So I'm sure that Team USA on their cruise ship had a lot of fun.
Yeah, I guess at this point I'm basically hoping your girlfriend just doesn't listen to this episode, because I feel like I've set too many traps for you with my questions about condoms and the Olympic gold and everything.
Well, see, I have nothing to hide. I was good.
right.
So. So let's kind of hope that she doesn't. She probably won't. But, like, let's be totally honest. To be honest, Kevin, there will be like 20 people listening to this thing, and you know what? We appreciate those 20 people.
Absolutely. Every single one of them is welcome to have their own follow up questions about Olympic Village sex and Brazilian women. So, no, I mean, I guess we should move on to this game last night, because it is.
Yeah.
I'm surprised by like the scathing takes from national media who like, it's so funny because the way this works now is they spend the entire week leading up to the game being like, you know, Appalachian State's going to be a great test for Tennessee. That's a well-coached team. That's a team with a strong history. And then when Appalachian goes out and plays a great game and pushes Tennessee to the wire, it's like, well, what the hell is Tennessee doing? They're clearly terrible.
Right.
You just spent a week talking about how good Appalachian State was. So, unfortunately, the reactionary world we're living in now with sports is tough to swallow when it's your team. But in general, I just Tennessee came out and laid a pretty big egg last night. I mean, I was there, and it was tough to watch because it's the same old things for Tennessee. It's predictable play calling. It's a lack of discipline when it comes to, you know, Jalen Reeves may have been getting thrown out of a game for a hit that he knew was illegal. Was it a bad call? Maybe. I mean, it was a little soft, but in general, like it's just a lack of discipline. And like the worst part was it was Tennessee just getting beat so bad in the lines. I mean, and neither the offensive or defensive line looked organized or up to the hype that they've been given here in the preseason. So my honest guess is it was a weird time for the team with a midweek game. I think they thought it was going to be easier. They've probably been reading their own headlines too much. They came out flat. I choose to believe they'll get it together. But if you're a Tennessee fan, what you have to be concerned about right now is at this point, is every game Tennessee goes into, are you worried that your coach is going to get significantly outcoached by his competition? I mean, we haven't seen a game yet where you walk away and you're like, man, Butch Jones just really outcoached that guy. I mean, because that doesn't happen. And he's loaded his team up with enough talent to win games regardless. But at this point, you have to ask yourself, like, when is he going to figure this out? Because we have too much talent in here at Knoxville to go out and have a close game with Appalachian State for the sole reason that the coaching staff just wasn't organized.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you, especially on that first part you're talking about with the national media, because it was, I think anybody that has followed college football for a long time recognizes that Appalachian State is a very good program. And I think it was even the USA Today ranked them when they ranked all 120 or whatever college football teams. They ranked them like 43rd ahead of, I think,
right,
six or seven SEC teams. Like that was not a bad team that came into Neyland Stadium. I would imagine Appalachian State probably isn't going to lose many more games the rest of this year. But yeah, I remember reading an article a couple of months back. I think it was one of the Pro Football Focus articles talking about the top five lines in college football, offensive and defense combined. I think Appalachian State was ranked third or fourth. That's a really good football team. And especially on the offensive line, Tennessee has struggled. And they're still kind of – it looks like they're still figuring it out. But, yeah, I mean, like, that's a good team. And I think that's what people fail to realize. It's the same thing, you know, 2 years ago with Utah State, and especially last year with Bowling Green. Like, that, Tennessee is playing these teams that, you know, you look at the name and it's like, okay, Tennessee should, you know, wipe the floor with them. But they're good. Like, they are good football teams. I don't know. It's one of those things. We've talked about it before. Mike DeBoer still just doesn't look like he completely knows what he's doing, right?
No, that's absolutely right. And I don't know what the game plan was supposed to be. I'm assuming they thought they would just, same way with Bowling Green last year, I think they thought they would just power run and not show much of the playbook. I know for a fact they don't want Dobbs out of the pocket in these non-conference games. They just don't. They have told him specifically to stay in the pocket, throw the ball, don't run, save the run where you're putting your body on the line for, you know, for Florida and Alabama and Georgia. And then you see last night he goes in for that, which should have been a fumble on the goal line. Jalen Hurd really bailed him out, but I mean he just got the back end of a pile driver. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if he is hurt and we don't know about it yet, or at least bruised some ribs, because he just got destroyed. So that right there is the very reason they don't want him doing that. And when your line's not getting a push on a physically inferior team, it makes it hard. Because, I mean, I think I saw a stat that Jalen Hurd would have been, like, the third heaviest person on the App State defense.
Wow.
So, I mean, I think they just – they thought it was just going to be a simple, you know, power run left, power run right. You know, let Josh air it out when he wants to. But, again, it just seemed like the coaching staff – who I mean, I expect the players to look past Appalachian State. That's a normal thing for players to do. But if you're a football coach, and especially you're a football coach who is from the state of Michigan, Appalachian State should be all over your radar. I can't imagine that you have an excuse for coming into that game as unorganized, unprepared as they seemed to be last night.
Yeah, and it was one of those things. Going into the game, I was very curious how Tennessee was going to play that, especially offensively, because it's one of those where do you want to go ahead, open the playbook up, really try to bury App State early, but then at the same time, you're giving Virginia Tech an extra few days to take a look at that, to see everything that you're doing. And listen, I have the utmost respect for Justin Fuente and his staff. So I think that they're going to be able to cook up a really good game plan. So I guess it was a thing where Butch is just like, you know what? I've got better players. I can, like you said, just power run and keep it incredibly vanilla and we'll be fine. And it almost got him beat. I mean, it really did. When it was 13-6 going into that fourth quarter, I was very nervous. So my situation last night, I went to this. It was, you know, yesterday was September 1st, 9:01. Area code for Memphis is 9:01. So it was 9:01 day here in Memphis. So they're kind of having this little party at one of the outdoor bars downtown. And so I went to that just to hang out with some friends, and I was doing my best not to check my phone. Because, you know, I've got the game recording. I'll get back. I'll watch it later. But it is literally impossible because I have, you know, Bleacher Report sending me updates and ESPN sending me updates and CBS Sports sending me updates. And so every once in a while I would glance at my phone and I'm like, oh, my God, is this really happening? So we ended up leaving a little early and I got to watch the fourth quarter. But, I mean, and I later went back and watched the first three quarters. But, yeah, I was nervous. I mean, I'm sure that that was reflected in the stadium, right? I mean, I'm sure people were really nervous going into that fourth quarter.
Yeah, well, people were freaking out. People are angry. They have right to be. But, again, this is not indicative of where Tennessee is as a team. But last night's performance, in my opinion, is not that. It is indicative of what you just said. They had a flawed game plan. They thought they would just be able to walk out and beat a team based on their talent, which is fine because when you're playing at App State, you probably can. And when you're playing Virginia Tech, you probably can. I mean, the problem is that what this suggests about the team as a whole, which is they still don't have that mentality. If we're going to go out and beat everybody by as many points as we can, we're going to go out and just show everybody that we're the best team. They're still doing this thing where they're game by game. Like how can we do just enough to eke out a win here? And that's a huge problem. That's a huge problem for Tennessee. It's a big problem for Butch Jones because the fan base hates it. But that's a philosophy that he chose to stick with when he brought in Mike DeBoer. That's exactly what he signed up for when you make that hire. So it's just for me. I don't have as much of a problem with what happened in the game as I do with what that suggests about where this season is going, which is that you're going to be in a tight game with teams you shouldn't, because they shouldn't be in a tight game with Florida. They shouldn't be in a tight game with Virginia Tech. You can pretty much bet your bottom dollar they're going to be, because Butch Jones does not have that instinct to put his foot on the jugular. He just does not have it. So I think people need to take a deep breath and just relax about that game, because it's not we've seen it's the same roster with the same coaching staff as last year with if anything an upgraded D coordinator. So it's going to work itself out. They're going to improve, but at the same time, we still have the coach we have, and it still really remains to be seen whether or not that's a good thing or not.
So everybody start like a Bear Aspen regiment, like, because I'm with you. Like, these games are not going to be easy on the heart, you know. And as Tennessee people, we enjoy our food, so it's not like we already have a great diet anyways, but a nice, strong, healthy heart. And then watching Tennessee football just compounds on that. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's like you said, it's just kind of what Butch signed up for when he decided to bring in Mike DeBoer, because he just doesn't play this wide-open style of offense. That fundamentally, I just don't understand that, because you have probably the third most talented roster in the SEC and one of the 10 most talented rosters in the country. Why? Like, I don't understand how he can sit there and just say, all right, we're going to play it incredibly conservative and just hope to eke out wins. Like, that just I cannot understand that. I cannot fit that through my head why that's the case, especially the receivers. Tennessee is loaded at receivers, but they won't throw the football. I don't get it.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's frustrating for everybody, and I think we're going to see more of it. I have no reason to believe that philosophy is going to change anytime soon. It's been tough to watch, and it's also tough from a recruiting standpoint. How does Tennessee go about recruiting receivers right now to come and block this offense and not be an actual part of what's going on?
Right, like, so how are you going to go to Amari Rodgers? Like, can at this point, do you blame Amari Rodgers for saying I'd rather go play?
No, yeah. What do you say to Amari Rodgers?
You know?
What do you say to T. Higgins to
right?
How do you have someone watch that game and then talk to them about coming to Tennessee? But
exactly.
I'm probably being overdramatic. It's probably not that bad. I mean, it's not as though Josh Dobbs has not had great receivers to throw to since he's been here. He has not had an NFL receiver to throw to. We also don't know what the ceiling is for some of these guys because they're not getting the ball thrown to them, and they're certainly not getting the ball thrown to them very accurately. Dobbs is still throwing behind people real consistently. So it's very frustrating. I don't think last night is cause to panic necessarily because of what happened in the game. It's cause to panic necessarily because you're like, oh, my gosh, we're still doing this. We're still doing this thing where we're just I tweeted it last night. Butch Jones is just terrified of his own success. He has not figured out what to do with it yet. He has not figured out how to be on this level and go win games. He's always been a coach who he's moved up the coaching ladder based on his ability to slightly exceed expectations. You know, he wins the Big East at Cincinnati, which is a school that should win the Big East every now and then. You know, that's not uncommon.
Right.
And he did the same thing in his conference at Central Michigan. But you know, those are things that are not out of the ordinary for those schools. At Tennessee, winning the East is not out of the ordinary, but it's an expectation. It has to happen for you to keep your job.
Right.
And to do that in this conference, you have to be excellent. You have to be really, really excellent. And right now, he's a good coach. He's just not an excellent coach.
No, that's a very good point. And I mean, you know, we've all talked about this. Everyone around the country has talked about this. Like, this is it. Like, the cards could not have fallen more in your favor this season than they did. I mean, you look at Georgia, they've got a new coach. Of course they're going to have a talented roster, but they've got a new coach. I mean, new coaches just generally don't come in and win the SEC. Florida, again, they've got a talented roster. It's going to take them some time. I mean, they had, four quarterbacks transfer over the last couple of years, so they're scrambling for somebody. Alabama is replacing a lot of pieces. You know, I mean, Alabama still has a more talented roster than you do, but you have, I think at this point, a more experienced roster than Alabama does. And you don't have to play LSU, who, you know, I think is one of the two most talented rosters in the SEC. You don't have to play Ole Miss, you know, you don't have to play Auburn. You don't have to play a lot of these teams that are really good out west. You just have to beat the teams you're supposed to beat, basically, in the East. I mean, I think outside of Alabama, you're probably a favorite in Vegas every other game this season. Maybe the at Texas A&M, that one will be tough, and the at Georgia one will be tough. But you know, otherwise, you should be a favorite, and just about every other team, against every other team, Alabama.
I think Tennessee will be a favorite. I don't. If you're Vegas, I don't know what you do with Tennessee's lines because the difference between what they should win by and what they will win by is confusing because these guys let everyone stay in the game. Tennessee does not put anyone out. They let everybody stay in the game. And as long as they do that, they're giving themselves an opportunity to lose games they shouldn't, and they have shown in the past they're not great at winning games they shouldn't. So, I would say hold off on the panic button. I'm just seeing right now ESPN tweeted until they prove otherwise, we should probably pump the brakes on Josh Dobbs in Tennessee. Which is fair. Like it is fair, but again, like it's insane the crazy swing of hot takes that go on when they act like A, Tennessee didn't win the game, and B, they didn't know App State was a good team, and C, that everybody who's ever won a college title, including Tennessee, has won a very close game against a bad team in their season. It just happens. It sucks that it happened for Tennessee on night one. But you know, that's what makes this thing tough when you're a fan. Is like you have to just read stuff like that, and you get your hopes up, and then you have to watch a game like last night where really it's Tennessee shaking the rust off and working the kinks out, but it just looks awful. Aesthetically, it's tough. It's a tough thing to watch.
It is, and it's not fun. I mean, like the hype train has been going, you know, all off season. And then all of a sudden you come out here and you lose to a team named you almost lose to a team named Appalachian State. And so people, what they do is they just say, oh, okay, Tennessee, who's a top 10 team in the country, we think they're overrated. They almost lost to a team, Appalachian State. I don't know who Appalachian State is other than the fact they beat Michigan 9 years ago. Tennessee sucks again. Like that's the biggest loser was the fact that fans and Tennessee supporters now have to put up with their buddy that's an Alabama fan feeling like he's justified in saying Tennessee's overrated. Like that's the toughest part of this whole thing is we all have buddies that are fans of other SEC teams, and now we have to listen to their crap because in some way it's tough to be like, you're like, no, people don't care that Appalachian State's actually good. You cannot sit there and explain that to someone because they don't want to hear it. All they see is that name. And they play in what, the Sun Belt Conference or whatever? That's all they care about.
Right.
And you almost lost to them at home, and you're supposed to be really good. And first of all, I mean, it's all rooted in incorrect information, the fact that Tennessee is overrated every year, because that's just not the case. Every year Butch Jones has been there, they've literally met expectations. You know, like I saw someone tweet the other day that, Tennessee, a top 10 team every year, but they can never win. Like, I think the last time Tennessee was a top 10 team was like 05 or 06.
Right.
It's literally
been
a decade. So, like, I don't know what you're talking about. So, I don't know. I mean, that's –
Well, it's just because Tennessee fans talk shit like nonstop. Right. We bring this on ourselves. We absolutely do. I don't deny that. But, no, it's a – yeah, it's a – it's going to be a frustrating couple of weeks, I imagine, but whatever. I'm actually going to Bristol next week, and me and a bunch of buddies got some RVs. We're going to camp out, and I'm going to wear overalls and drink moonshine out of a jug with an X on it or whatever. But, no, we're
nice,
good time.
Nice.
Yeah, man. Well, hey,
there's nothing more American than that.
Unfortunately, my day job has actually called me, as I'm going to have to hop off, but I appreciate you having me back on, buddy. It's always good to talk to you.
Absolutely, Kev. We will we'll do it again soon, man.
Absolutely, yeah, definitely. I want to follow up after Bristol, and I'll let you know where the Knoxville Suicide Watch how serious that's looking.
Please do. Yeah. Take care, man. And we'll do it again next week.
All right. Thanks, Jip.
All right.
See you.